You're listening to the NFL Draft Bible Podcast Network, part of Sports Illustrated, giving you daily NFL Draft, Dynasty, and Devy Fantasy Football podcasts.
Podcast presented by the Sports Illustrated Draft Bible Podcast Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sirifas, joined by always with my co-host, Eric Adams. On tonight's show, we're going to be discussing zero wide receiver strategy with our special guest, David Kluge from the Football Guys. And remember, you can always support our show by hitting the subscribe button, leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can find podcasts at. And make sure to hop into our Discord and talk fantasy football with us. But we're going to pop into it now. So, Dave, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about you, where everybody can find you, what you work on.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on, guys. My name is Dave Kluge. I've been in the industry for a few years now. I got my start with Fantasy Pros, and recently I've been putting a lot of my time and energy over at Football Guys. I'm doing a couple shows a week there. I'm doing one with Lauren Carpenter and another one with Troy King. I've got a few solo projects that I'm working on as well. One is a show on Thursday afternoons, and another is a Friday afternoon show with Steffi Smalls. Just been staying busy, but right now, you know, just got my rankings published, got an article on Lamar Jackson that should be dropping on Football Guys tomorrow, and the argument on that one is Lamar Jackson as my QB1, so that'll assuredly ruffle some feathers.
You almost had me kicking you off the podcast when I heard Lamar Jackson, and there's going to be no disparaging him.
Absolutely not. No, I have him as my QB1, and I've caught a little bit of heat from it, but I think that I have a pretty solid reasoning behind it. No disrespect to Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, any of those guys, but when it comes to fantasy football, I think Lamar Jackson and his perceived 1,000-yard rushing floor is just the best thing that you can hope for in a quarterback.
I love it. I can't wait to check that out. So tonight's show, we are going to be talking zero wide receiver. We're going to be doing a draft strategy segments on the show for the next few weeks. And we'll start with this. And you're a huge proponent of zero wide receiver. Why?
Well, you know, it's something that I started doing a few years ago, and it was working pretty beneficially for me. And when I say a few years ago, I mean back when I was in high school. Like, I started drafting like this about 12 years ago. And since then, I feel like the case for drafting zero wide receiver has just become even stronger. We see the league is heading towards more and more committees in the backfield, and we also see that the depth of talent for wide receivers is getting dramatically deeper while teams are starting to throw the ball more. So when you look at the way that the NFL has been shifting over the last couple of years, it just makes sense that you want to go out and you want to lock in those bell cows early and often because they are not as frequent as they used to be. 10 years ago when you were drafting, you could wait until the fifth or sixth round and you could pick up a guy that was still going to get 250 touches a season. He might not have been talented. He might not have done a lot with those touches, but he was still going to get the touches. When you look at it now, that list just keeps shrinking by the year. So I broke it down by decades in a recent article that I published, but however you want to break it up, whether it's 250 carries, 300 carries, 350 plus carries, however you break it up, it has been going down and down and down and down. Since 2011, we've only seen three guys see 350 carries. We've only seen 19 see 300 plus carries, where we used to see almost 10 a year hitting that mark. So I feel like if you want to go out and give yourself the safest floor possible in fantasy, you just want to smash running backs early.
Yeah. Eric, you have fairly heavy running back early, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. To echo what he said there, I mean, it's just we're moving more towards an NFL with a bunch of guys in the backfield. It's been more of a committee approach, which is just the way the NFL is moving. So I agree. I definitely agree. Smash running back early.
Yeah. And another thing is, in addition to these running backs being so valuable now because of their scarcity, the other thing is you can get extremely talented wide receivers late in the draft. Last year, when you look at the top 12 wide receivers in scoring, six of those 12 guys came after the fourth round. So there's no reason to spend early draft capital on a wide receiver because you can still get those guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth round.
Yeah, Now, do you feel this way, whether it's Dynasty or Redraft? Because I know a lot of people in Dynasty are wide receiver early and then go from there.
That's exactly. This is for redraft only. As a matter of fact, I just did a dynasty startup the other day, and I started my draft with AJ Brown, Devontae Adams, and Allen Robinson, and I caught a lot of flack from people that follow me on Twitter saying, "Hey, aren't you the zero running back guy?" No. When you look at the career lengths, you know, even an elite running back is going to have a very short shelf life of 2 to 3 years, where you can see guys like Julio Jones that have just been doing this for a decade plus now. Calvin Johnson, had he not retired, he'd still be putting up wide receiver one numbers, where we saw, you know, just 2 years ago, Todd Gurley was a unanimous number one overall pick, and now he can't even find a job in the NFL. So, no, this zero wide receiver strategy is exclusive to redraft.
Okay. Perfect. Now, with the dynasty, looking at it, I'm kind of getting off the show sheet a little bit. So a lot of people, if you're going to start like that, does that mean you're hammering running backs here at rookie drafts?
Yeah. So that's one thing. And another thing is you can still get aging veteran running backs for very cheap in these dynasty startups. So it might not be pretty, but you know, you can get yourself Chris Carson and David Johnson, and you know, even Ezekiel Elliott right now has fallen into the fourth round in some dynasty startups. So you can still get, you know, good guys that are going to be a little bit older that you can plug in for a year or two. And then, yeah, once you hit those rookie drafts, then that's when you got to really go hard after running backs, because you know, hopefully you've gotten enough wide receivers early that you're going to be set at the wide receiver position for the next 3 to 5 years. And then you want to just, you know, hope to fill in the gaps with some young running backs.
Okay. Perfect. Now, we're looking at draft position, like for the early rounds, sticking with zero receiver. Or do you have an ideal area of the draft you're wanting? Just because the way BPA, best player available, lands with, say, better running backs go early and you may have a little bit of a drop off. Does that change anything if you're debate between a little bit lesser running back and someone like Devontae Adams?
Yeah, and this year, from what I've noticed in the drafts that I've been doing, are that it's pretty much like midway through the fourth round that you really see the running backs dry up. So the guys that you're looking at after that midway point through the third round, you know, if you want to roll the dice on a Myles Gaskin or a Zach Moss or something like that, those guys are available, but I would much rather lock in the premium talent early on. So the other thing that I like to say, you know, I preach zero running back when I'm doing these redraft leagues, but it's not something that I feel like you should completely lock yourself into. If you've got an early first round pick and then, you know, coming back around in the second half, AJ Brown is still available, Devontae Adams is still available, you know, one of those like absolute premium guys, I think you'd be crazy to pass up on the value there. But what I like to do is explain this to people, especially beginners that are new to fantasy football, just because it's a really easy way to explain how valuable running backs are in the game.
Yeah. So, Eric, with you, we're talking about these running backs and the gap. What is your gap looking like with those top running backs? You're just starting to sprinkle receivers in for you.
Yeah, so for me, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Ezekiel Elliott, Austin Eckler, Jonathan Taylor, Alvin Kamara, Joe Mixon, Chris Carson, Aaron Jones, and that is pretty much it for me. I won't take a wide receiver if any of those guys are still on the board. All of those guys are going before Devontae Adams, before AJ Brown, before Tyreek Hill for me.
Wow, okay. Eric, out of those names, where's your cutoff there? Because there's a few that are raising eyebrows now. One that pays me the most to say raises eyebrows is Joe Mixon. But, like, even Austin Eckler, where are you breaking off at there?
I thought he had a pretty good list. You didn't say DeAndre Swift, did you?
I did not, no. And if we delve into this, it can turn into quite the thing. I'm a little bit lower on DeAndre Swift than the consensus is. But, you know, if you wanted to take DeAndre Swift, if you wanted to lump him in with that group, I wouldn't fault you at all. It's just not somebody that I'm, you know, going out and targeting and valuing quite as high as everyone else. Nick Chubb and Antonio Gibson are two other guys that I might think about taking as well.
All right. I mean, I'm pretty much on board with that list that he gave. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That really does make sense. I like zero wide receiver more than the other zero draft strategies. This one's just the one that just makes the most sense to me because there's wide receivers so deep. I mean, your wide receiver 27 from last year, I believe, was it was Cole Beasley in ESPN. And then wide receiver 37 only scored 20 less points. It's not even that much of like a difference. If you can get the value of fill your team out with good strong running backs, a good quarterback, get the nice tight end, and then go wide receiver and still have very talented wide receivers available, that makes sense to me. Zero running back is the one that we'll have to have an argument one day because that's the one that I'm questionable on.
And what I've heard, I talked to a zero running back aficionado, Denny Carter over at NBC Sports Edge. I was talking with him a couple weeks ago, and he said the way that he put it is zero running back is not for the faint of heart. He said that it's not a team that you're going to be coming in third, fourth, fifth place. He said it's kind of an all or nothing. He's like, you're either winning your league because you got James Robinson and Mike Davis and those guys from last year, or you are just in dead last getting pummeled every single week. He said there's really no in between.
Yeah, I agree. I can definitely see that. So look at these running. I'm still like kind of stuck on the running backs here. You said, I feel like Eckler's another one I'm a little lower on. Like, you're taking him mid to late second then?
Oh, man. If you're low on Eckler, you're not going to like ranking.
I'm not low on him, but I'm not clamoring to get him early second.
See, now I'm taking Austin Eckler mid first. I've got him as my RB7. I think his pass catching upside. I think having a new head coach over there, being tied to Justin Herbert. I mean, we've seen it. The biggest thing holding him back has been opportunity. But if you look from the start of 2019 and you look at the games that Austin Eckler has started in from the beginning of 2019 until right now, he is the RB3 in points per game. It's Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, and Austin Eckler. So he's been limited with injuries. He was splitting touches with Melvin Gordon. But now that it's his backfield, I think the sky's the limit for him. And I'd be shocked to see him finish outside of RB1 territory in 2021.
Strong agree.
I think he will finish as an RB1. I feel like his
value. I should also point out that this is PPR. I mean, in standard leagues, I'm much lower. I mean, I don't know many people that are playing standard leagues anymore. Standard leagues, I've got him as a low end RB1, but in PPR, I wouldn't fault somebody for putting him in their top five.
What happens if they get Julio for Eckler then?
I mean, I think that just opens up more opportunity for him. It's not like Julio is going to be taking those short checkdowns and dump offs. He's going to be going down the field, opening up more space for Austin Eckler. And Eckler, that's where he does the majority of his damage, is in the open space with that elusiveness and that agility. So I'd love if they got Julio. I don't think that adding Julio to any team can really hurt them. It might hurt the wide receiver one in some situations, but Julio's that type of guy. You could plug him on any team in the NFL right now, and they are instantly a better team than they were before making that transaction.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going through this. So you prefer earlier draft picks then, like top five pick with this?
Yeah, I don't think draft order is really something that I get too hung up on because I'll just kind of play what's given to me. There's a lot of running backs that I like. You know, I listed, I think probably 12 or 14 that I'd take before wide receivers. But even once you get past that, there still are other guys that I like. You know, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, maybe even Melvin Gordon, Najee Harris, and some other guys, David Montgomery. I'll take whatever is given to me, but if I had to pick, I think having one of those top three spots is one of the best spots to be in this year, because I think that's where there's a pretty big tier fall off. I think that Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, and Saquon Barkley are in a tier of their own. So I think if you're able to lock in one of those guys, and then in the second, when it wraps back around you, you can still get Chris Carson and David Montgomery or something like that, and that's how you're starting your draft off, I think you're in a great spot. And another thing I should mention is zero wide receiver doesn't mean that you just have to draft running back. The other exceptions that I make are Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, and George Kittle. If those guys are available in the late second, early third, that's where I'm okay reaching for a tight end after this year, because the fall off after those three guys is even more dramatic than the fall off after the top 20 running backs.
I'm glad you just said that, because I feel like a lot of people with the tight ends, if you say something like what you just said about Kittle, Kelsey, or Waller, I feel like people just react like you just said a swear word. That's how people feel about the tight end thing. I'm like, I want a good tight end. I don't want to be sweating it out with, you know, TJ Hockenson if he wants to show up one week. I want a premier guy.
Talk about TJ like that.
Look, I love TJ Hockenson as much as the next guy, but he's got to be consistent. Those guys are consistently studs week in and week out. Until he gets there, I will not talk about him like that. I love TJ just as much as you do. Don't worry.
And I'm a fan of TJ Hockenson too, but he's not somebody that I'm going to have on any of my rosters. TJ Hockenson, Noah Fant, Dallas Goedert. I like those guys, and I think that they do have the potential to break out. But right now, everybody's betting on that potential, and you need to cough up a fifth or sixth round pick to get a guy like that. So, you know, you're passing on a guy like Cortland Sutton or Diontae Johnson to get one of those mid-tier tight ends. And I feel like this happens every single year where we fall in love with these guys that we think are going to break out in that mid-tight end tier. When really, I mean, the fall off is dramatic. Even Mark Andrews is a guy that I'm not that crazy about. You know, he's going to have his big games, but his floor games are really going to hurt you. So if I'm unable to get one of those top three tight ends, I'm waiting until the last few rounds, and I'll get myself Anthony Firkser and Mo Alie-Cox and Cole Kmet and some of these other guys that I think have just as much of a likelihood of breaking out and don't cost that draft capital.
Absolutely.
So say you're starting to draft out two stud running backs, like you mentioned. Grab one of those tight ends in the third. Fourth comes around. What's your ideal, what you're looking for?
And this is where I'll start. So some people that say zero wide receiver, you know, some people really go hard with the zero and they won't even start looking a wide receiver's way until the seventh or eighth round. The fourth round is typically when I will start to think about looking for some wide receivers. And there's some guys that are dropping into the fourth right now that I really like. Allen Robinson is one of them. Diontae Johnson's another one. Kenny Galladay is dropping into the fourth. And those guys, I think, have all of the makings to be wide receiver ones. I mean, we've seen Allen Robinson put up back-to-back wide receiver one seasons. And for some reason, he gets a quarterback upgrade, and now he's dropping into the fourth round. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I feel like you can still get those guys. You know, last year, the guys that I was targeting in that area, Stephon Diggs, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, those guys all paid off. And this year, I see a same crop of receivers in that fourth and fifth round that I think could really, really pay off.
Yeah, and you don't have to go so hardcore on a strategy like that for it to work. In fact, it doesn't seem like you want it all. And you mentioned those guys like Robinson, Diontae Johnson, Kenny Galladay, they're all really good. Even like Bobby Woods, you can build a receiving core late.
Yeah, now, exactly. And if you take three wide receivers there, you know, one or two of them might miss and one or two of them are going to hit. So if you go three straight running backs there and the guys you mentioned, let's say you get Allen Robinson, let's say you get Diontae Johnson, and let's say you get Cortland Sutton. Two of those guys hit and they're week in and week out starters. You've already, you know, put yourself in a position to win that league.
Yeah. Now, with your build receiving core, I'm a huge proponent of building it almost like NFL, like where I'm looking for different style receivers. Like, I like to mix a high floor. I'm going to say Jarvis Landry, even though he's an older guy, but that type of player, he's going to be a high PPR guy with a Tyler Lockett who's been robust to win me a week. With this strategy, is that something you look to do even more so, like where you're hitting both ceiling and floor guys mixed in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And typically what I'll do in the early to mid rounds, the third or the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, that's when I'm looking for the guys that I know are going to get a lot of volume. And that's, you know, Robbie Anderson. We saw him lead the team in volume last year. Cortland Sutton, I think he's going to be the wide receiver one on his team. Allen Robinson has seen 150 targets in back-to-back years. Keenan Allen is even a guy that drops into the fourth round every once in a while that you know is going to get it. So when I'm looking in those fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds, what I really want is as safe as you can get. Somebody that you know is going to get peppered with targets that you can start every single week. As I move further and further down the draft, that's when I start getting, my risk tolerance goes up quite a bit. And then I start swinging for the fences. You know, LaVisca Chenault, Michael Pittman, Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, some of these guys who might have had disappointing rookie seasons, but still have the talent to pop off. Those are guys that I start getting interested in later on in the draft.
Yeah.
Well, shout out Jarvis Landry, though. I love the Jarvis Landry call out. That man gets no respect. And it's like year in and year out, he just puts up like solid wide receiver two numbers. It's never flashy. It's never special. But like the guy just gets targets and gets it done almost every week.
He's so boring, but he'll get you 11 points.
Exactly.
Like you're locked in. He's not going to get you more. He's not going to get you less. I'm cool with it. I plug him a wide receiver three. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, this like mid round receiver range, who are you going to be targeting here for you?
What's that?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Eric.
I'm looking at the mid rounds. This is the one strategy that I like because you got in the fifth round, you got Bobby Woods going, you got Cooper Kupp that I would love to take a shot on, Deontay Johnson, as you mentioned, T. Higgins, you got DJ Moore falling to the sixth, Chase Claypool, if you want to take a chance on Beckham, I guess, Brandon Ayuk, DJ Shark. There's just so many good wide receivers from the fourth and fifth round on. So, you know, those types of guys, yeah, if you could stock the other positions, it does make a lot of sense.
Yeah. You kind of mentioned how you do this for redraft and ignore for, and don't do it as much for dynasty. Honestly, I don't hate it for dynasty to an extent if I'm locking in one of those early guys.
You'll have a really sexy looking team early on, but you know the shelf life of that team might only last 2 or 3 years. We see how fast running backs can fall off.
It is. You have to play that game on sell them before they're done. Like if I'm picking that three spot, Saquon's there. I'm gonna snag him up, and I'm gonna BPA the next round. I could easily see myself going that way. But you have to move him before it's too late. We're seeing even like with the short, like Derrick Henry's a guy. He's fourth round dynasty startups now, and that's absurd. It kind of forces you to go the opposite way.
And what do you think you're expecting with Derrick Henry? You might get another, you know, maybe a one like one more RB1 season, but that guy's got a lot of miles on his legs. The hits are piling up, and historically we've seen after somebody hits 2,000 yards, they typically don't follow it up with a great season. So I can kind of get behind that one just a little bit.
Yeah, so in that range, and redraft obviously he's still fantastic, but yeah, in that range, I think he's kind of value there. But yeah, strategy-wise, I think it works either way. Now, if we're shooting late round guys, who are some of your later round targets you're shooting for in this to really make it work? I got anybody that says mid round guys like the Michael Pittman's, Viscas.
So how deep are we talking here?
Like ninth, tenth round on.
Right. So yeah, there's one guy that I've been consistently targeting in the 10th round of every single one of my drafts, and that is Antonio Brown. For whatever reason, people are acting like Antonio Brown isn't still a great player. He's caught 6 touchdowns in the last 6 games he played. Tom Brady loves him. We saw him catch a touchdown in the one game that he played with New England. And for some reason, people are acting like this guy wasn't a top 3 wide receiver for 6 consecutive seasons. I think he's still got it. And right now, going in the 10th round, that guy, I mean, I have a feeling I might start reaching for him in the 9th round just if people start becoming a little bit more savvy to it. But right now, in the best ball drafts that I've done, I currently have 87% exposure on Antonio Brown. It's very rare that somebody will take Antonio Brown before I do.
Wow. That's a hell of a lot of AB right there.
But he's a guy that, you know, that's when you start kind of chasing the upside. And, you know, there's a possibility that Antonio Brown averages 5 points a game. There's another possibility that he ends up as the wide receiver one. So that's what I started looking at in those rounds is the upside. And I think that, you know, Antonio Brown has some of the highest upside of anybody in that situation. Another guy that I mentioned, well, Michael Pittman, you know, he might be a little bit earlier than what we want to talk about, but Mecole Hardman is another guy that I feel like every single year we keep buying into the Mecole Hardman hype and it hasn't really worked out yet, but they got rid of Sammy Watkins. And I think that could open up some opportunity for Mecole Hardman. So he's a guy that I'm going after. And then, you know, I'm a Bears fan, so I try not to be too biased with this take. But Darnell Mooney, man, I love me some Darnell Mooney. The problem last year wasn't that he was doing anything wrong. He was getting wide open. He was blowing the top off the defenses consistently. And when he would get open, either Trubisky couldn't see him or Nick Foles couldn't accurately get the ball to him. So I think that once Justin Fields takes over, you know, just a better quarterback than Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles combined, I think the sky can be the limit for Darnell Mooney.
So the first day of training camp.
we'll see, man. I don't know exactly what they have planned right now. It sounds like they're still planning to go with Andy Dalton. So I guess we'll see. But I think that once Justin Fields takes over, we're just going to see a meteoric rise out of Darnell Mooney's stock.
If the Bears plan to win, I think they'll be changing that plan pretty quickly.
I hope so. I want the Russell Wilson approach where, you know, they draft him and they say he's going to sit for a year and then he just comes out in camp and lights plays so well that they say we have no choice but to play this guy.
Yep.
It's a real nice feeling when it happens when that young quarterback takes over.
And then one more, if we got time for it, is Rashad Bateman. And I understand that, you know, a lot of people are pretty unhappy with Rashad Bateman's landing spot. But, you know, cream rises to the top, and Rashad Bateman is a talented dude. And we saw it last year at the beginning of the season. The Baltimore Ravens wanted to throw the ball more. Lamar Jackson was averaging 27 passes per game to start the season. And then after they went on this losing streak where they lost four or five games, then they kind of reverted back to letting Lamar run like crazy. His pass attempts per game dropped to 20. So I think that them going out and getting Rashad Bateman, getting Tylan Wallace, bringing in Sammy Watkins, shows that they are committed to actually throwing the ball a little bit more next year. And Rashad Bateman, he was one of my favorite wide receivers coming out of this draft. And I think that he is going to be something special. Even if it's a team that runs the ball a lot, I think that Rashad Bateman is somebody that can easily sit atop the target leaderboard for the Baltimore Ravens as a rookie.
You know, I'm a Ravens fan, so like you pre-talk about this, get me excited. But you mentioned about the passing attempts going down, and I didn't realize that myself was that early in the season, that drop off. And a lot of it is that receiving core last year was bad. Like, yeah, it's really bad. It was really bad. I don't think people just don't want to listen to it for some reason. Willie Snead's not a good receiver. He's not going to be playing this year. Miles Boykin is going to be sixth on the depth chart, and he's going for every down player.
Yeah.
This receiving core is completely different, and you're Bateman's that kind of receiver. So yeah. I love it. And I mean,
you don't want to be relying on Miles Boykin and Devin Duvernay to make splashy plays. Like that's not what you want. Mark Andrews, their tight end, was number two in targets. And, you know, no disrespect to Marquise Brown, I think that he would be fantastic in the NFL as a wide receiver too. Marquise Brown is not the guy that you want leading your wide receiver core.
Nope, not at all. And then you mentioned Mecole Hardman. I didn't even realize he's still only 23. He's the oldest 23-year-old in the league right now. Like, I feel like he's been letting us down for so long. He's like 30. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's somebody, when you look at that speed and you look at Patrick Mahomes' arm, I mean, that's why we keep falling for it every single year. And sure, there's a chance that he burns you again, but with where he's getting drafted right now, I mean, the risk is just worth it, in my opinion. You don't have to draft him until the 12th or 13th round.
Eric, how about you? How about any later guy, receivers you're targeting? You're going to RB heavy early?
I'm looking at Gabe Davidson round 13 here. I'm eating that up all day. I know there's a lot of mouths to feed in Buffalo, but what he showed a lot last year, and I just think he's going to keep coming on this year. I really like him. Denzel Mims in the round 13, he didn't show it as much last year, but I mean, the Jets were just a mess. I expect him to have a better season. Jalen Waddle going round 13. You know how I feel about Jalen Waddle. So there's a lot of weight around wide receivers I'm definitely interested in.
I'm a big fan of Denzel Mims too. You know, I talked about one of my favorite things to do is buy underperforming rookies. You know, these guys that had great profiles and didn't show up their rookie season, get him the next year at a discount because, you know, there's a reason that he got drafted high. And now they've got Zach Wilson. They've got a new head coach. They've got Mike LaFleur over there running the offense. I think Denzel Mims is a great target as well.
Improved O-line as well. Goes a long way.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely does. Another guy I kind of like later is Brian Edwards. We all loved him for like 3 weeks last year, and that team did nothing to improve their offense or give more weapons there. And Derek Carr's not going to be just taking deep shots all day to Henry Ruggs. He could be their target leader this year outside of Darren Waller, obviously. And he is right now wide receiver 72 in Dynasty and 80 in redraft. So he's
a little bit concerned. I think last year he only saw 15 targets on the entire season. So yeah, I mean, that's the argument is that you can take him in the very last round and he doesn't cost anything at all. So, you know, there's no risk baked in that whatsoever, but you know, he's somebody that I'm a little bit concerned about.
I would be concerned about every single player on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Except for Darren Waller. Darren Waller is, Darren Waller is going to do his thing. I'm concerned about Kenyon Drake, Josh Jacobs, everybody. But yeah, Darren Waller, I've actually, you know, since we're bringing up some of my spicy rankings, I've got Darren Waller as my tight end one because of how bad the rest of that wide receiver core is. You know, Travis Kelce is great. No disrespect to him, but Tyreek Hill is still going to get his touches. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire takes a step forward with his touches. I think that Darren Waller could easily see 150 targets this year.
I'm on board with it. I mean, I like it.
It's not wrong. Like, it's spicy, but it's not out of the question whatsoever. All right. Back to kind of the strategy wise, you're going back to you take the running backs early, you pop the receivers in the mid rounds. Are you hopping back? When are you going to hop back to running backs and get depth there? Are you shooting for like role playing players? Handcuffs, what kind of guys are you looking for when you jump back into that?
You know, it's an old school approach, and I've heard some minds that I really, really respect say that it's not worth handcuffing anymore. JJ Zacharyson is one of them. He, you know, came out with this article saying that handcuffing is pointless. You should be shooting for upside and stealing other people's handcuffs. And I understand that there's a point to be made there, but if I'm investing premium draft capital in Dalvin Cook and Saquon Barkley and these guys, I do want to make sure that I have their backup in case something happens. If you drafted Christian McCaffrey number one overall last year and you didn't have Mike Davis as an insurance policy, there's a good chance you weren't even sniffing playoffs. So, you know, just for me, I like having the peace of mind of handcuffing at least one of my top backs. But once I get later in the rounds, you know, I'm not going too crazy. Usually I'm looking for handcuffs more than I am guys that I think, you know, have breakout potential. So, you know, Philip Lindsay is a guy that I like. I think that David Johnson is going to be the starter there, but we've seen David Johnson get hurt almost every single year. I mean, it's almost, you can almost just write it down in pen that David Johnson is going to miss at least one game in 2021. So I think that's when Philip Lindsay can step in and be a decent player. Chris Carson is another guy who consistently deals with injuries. And Rashad Penny now is on the last year of his contract with Seattle. So if he goes down, I don't think that Seattle's going to have any qualms about just running him into the ground. You know, Marlon Mack is another guy. I know the Achilles injury is a little scary, but I think that he is more posed for the early down work than Nyheim Hines would be. So if something happens to Jonathan Taylor, I could see Marlon Mack stepping in, putting up, you know, high-end RB2 numbers like we saw from him in 2019. So that's typically what I'm going for in those rounds are our handcuffs, whether it be mine or somebody else's.
Yeah, I like that if you get the running backs early for sure. And like you said, like Mike Davis, you waste your whole fab budget on him if you didn't have him handcuffed, and a lot of people didn't.
Mm-hmm. I drafted Reggie Bonifant in the last round of my home league draft last year because I thought Reggie Bonifant was going to be the backup to Christian McCaffrey. And I don't want to say I was excited when Christian McCaffrey got hurt. Obviously, as a fan of the game, I don't want to see one of the best players get out of there. But as a Reggie Bonifant owner, I was like, sweet, I just got myself an RB1. And then Mike Davis just came out of freaking nowhere and took over that team.
That finding the right handcuffs hard, that's a whole different episode right there. But yeah, absolutely there. Eric, you got any other ones on Z wide receiver?
I understand where you want to target a running back early and make sure that position's filled out because the depth's not as strong. But if I'm going to do this strategy, I'm going to tell you right now, in the first three rounds, I want Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. I want one of the top three tight ends and then another running back. That's, if I'm doing this strategy, that's what I'm going to be looking for. I want a Lamar Jackson. I want a Josh Allen. And then I want one of those tight ends, the Kelce, Wallers, Kittles. Ideally, that's what I would like. That would make me feel good because then I could just smash my receiver. No. I'm talking period. I am talking, yeah, period. Talking period. I won't.
So you'd take quarterback earlier then?
I would. Especially if it's Lamar.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. I am, you know, when it comes to the Konami code quarterback, I am all in on that. I want to make sure. So if I do strike out for whatever reason, you know, get a little bit too excited and take some running backs and Lamar and those guys are gone, I'm almost, you know, 100% of the time taking Jalen Hurts in the fifth or sixth round because I want the quarterback that has that rushing upside. You know, I just looked at it last year. It was a small sample size, but you know how they say, you know, 40 passing yards is equivalent to one passing. Or 40 passing yards is I'm sorry, 40 rushing yards is equivalent to one passing touchdown. One rushing touchdown is equivalent to 1.5 passing touchdowns. So a lot of math that I just threw out there, but that's kind of, you know, the Konami code summed up. And if you look at Jalen Hurts, what he was able to do last year as a rusher, you extrapolate that over 17 games, and that's the equivalent to 47 extra passing touchdowns. So that's the floor that you're getting with Jalen Hurts. You know, he's going to have interceptions, he's going to fumble the ball, all that, but he's almost a lock for what's equivalent to nearly 3 passing touchdowns a game just because of his rushing upside.
Beautiful. And that's a big selling point for him, who's ever kind of forgotten about a little bit this year. So we're coming back to that fourth round. Allen Robinson's there, Lamar's there. What's your move?
Oh man, you're making me choose like my favorite guy to build around and my QB1.
I specifically went after two people who could be around that area who you specifically said you liked. I did that on purpose, yeah. Sorry.
That's a tough one for me. I'm probably going with Allen Robinson, though. As much as I love Lamar Jackson, you know, I feel like the depth of talent for the high-end quarterback ones is a little bit higher. Another guy that I'm really, really high on if I strike out on Lamar Jackson is Dak Prescott. They've got a terrible defense. He still has some rushing upside. He likes to run the ball, especially when they get close to the goal line. So even if I do miss out on Lamar Jackson, who is my QB1, I feel like, you know, the top 6 or 7 quarterbacks this year are all pretty close to each other. So, yeah, you know, I love Lamar Jackson, but I'm probably not pulling the trigger in the fourth quarter or in the fourth round.
Yeah. I have 5.5 quarterbacks all tiered right together. So yeah, I agree with that.
So who you got? Mahomes, Allen, Murray, Jackson, Dak, and then who's the half there?
Herbert. I can't fully say he's there. He's like, I'm going to take that on the poll approach where I'm not saying a real answer on it, but he's right there.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, same with Ross. He's just barely there.
Mm-hmm. And you could throw Rodgers and Hurts, and there's a lot of guys that you can kind of throw in that second tier. But yeah, I think it's like 5 or 6 guys, and then that's where the pretty big fall off is.
I think the second tier is smaller than the first tier almost before you have more question marks.
Yeah, because then once you get out of that second tier, then you're looking at a bunch of veteran pocket passers, and that is not what you want in fantasy football. You know, I love Matt Ryan. I love Tom Brady. You know, these guys are great, but they're going to have some weeks that are really going to hurt you in fantasy.
Are you telling me Tom Brady's not going to rush for 1,000 yards this season?
I mean, crazier things have happened, but I would bet against it.
It's on his bucket list.
I don't know if Tom Brady has rushed for 1,000 yards in his career.
I actually know that. No, he definitely is not. I don't think he has, because I remember there was one game where they're like, oh, the kneel down just brought him under 1,000, somewhere around that. I don't think it was even 1,000. It might have been 100. I don't know.
It's something low.
It's not high.
Yeah, 1,043. Yeah, it looks like he passed it in 2018, but my man had a whopping 6 rushing yards all of last year.
Yeah, so it was 1,000. I remember because I think it was whenever it was that he passed it, they're like, oh, the kneel down just brought him back under 1,000, and he leapfrogged like 3 games.
I mean, how crazy is that Lamar Jackson in 1 year was able to rack up more rushing yards than Tom Brady has through an incredible 20-year career?
The funny thing is, knowing Tom, that probably bothers him. That probably does bother him.
Just another chip on his shoulder.
Just throw it on there.
Last one. Does it Superflex push everything down for you just more? Or is it much different for you drafting-wise when it comes to waiting on the receivers?
Superflex leagues are just wild nowadays. It seems like you almost just – if you don't get out of those first 3 rounds with 2 quarterbacks – you're screwed. So Superflex really changes the game. Everybody realizes the importance of having a high-end quarterback. But, you know, are we talking dynasty or redraft here? I just did a dynasty stupid fuck startup where I didn't take my first running back until the fifth round, and you know
that is still a solid running back.
Yeah, Aaron Jones dropped me in the fifth round, and then I got Chris Carson in the sixth, and I'm very happy with Aaron Jones and Chris Carson for the next year or two. But
quarterbacks to start and what else?
I got Lamar Jackson was my first pick, okay. And then I had AJ Brown, Devontae Adams, Allen Robinson, and then I went with Aaron Jones, Chris Carson, Evan Ingram. So basically just filled out my – oh, and then Baker Mayfield immediately after that. Baker Mayfield dropped all the way to the seventh. So that one worked out nicely for me. That was one of the best startups I think I've ever had. But, with Superflex, I'm usually with my first three picks. If it's redraft, I'm going two quarterbacks and a running back. And if it is dynasty, I'm probably going with two quarterbacks and a receiver.
Yeah.
But Superflex is different. Sometimes you just got to play what drops you. You know, sometimes people are hammering running backs and or hammering quarterbacks, and you don't want to get stuck at the end of that run. You know, you don't want to be the guy that's taking Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow with your 12th and 13th pick. So sometimes you've got to go a little bit against the grain if everyone's going real hard at quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, and spoiler alert, we're doing Superflex next week, so I just kind of wanted to lean into that a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah. Dave, really appreciate you coming on. Tell me again where they can find you and anything else to check out.
I just tell everyone I've got so much going on with guest spots and new shows that I'm hosting and articles and all this stuff. So just follow me on Twitter. That's the easiest way to see what I got going on. It is at Dave Kluge. That's Dave, KLUGE.
Super easy. And Eric, are you working on anything? Where they found you?
I'm working on a bucket of chicken that I got upstairs, and they can find me at the FF_taters on Twitter. And
awesome. Well, guys, thanks for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe, hit the 5-star review, and check us out next week on Dynasty Draft Room presented by the Sports Illustrated Draft Bible.
Later, taters.